Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 40, Canto 3, Chapter 24. Matra adhyatmakim vidyam shamanim sarvakarmanam vitarishye yaya chasau Vayam chati karishyati. Matra adhyatmakim vidyam. Shamanim sarvakarmanam. Vitarishye yaya chaso. Vayam chati karishyati. Matre. To my mother, adhyatmakim, which opens the door of spiritual life, vidyam, knowledge, shamanim, ending, sarva karmanam, all fruitive activities. Vitarishye, I shall give, yaya, by which, cha, also, asau, she, bhayam, fear, cha, also, atarishyati, will overcome. Translation, I shall also describe this sublime knowledge, which is the door to spiritual life, to my mother, so that she can also attain perfection and self-realization, ending all reactions to fruitive activities. Thus, she will also be freed from all material fear. Purport. Kardava Muni was anxious about his good wife Devahuti while leaving home, and so the worthy son promised that not only would Kardava Muni be freed from the material entanglement, but Devahuti would also be freed by receiving instruction from her son. A very good example is set here. The husband goes away, taking the sannyas order for self-realization, but his representative, the son, who is equally educated, remains at home to deliver the mother. A sannyasi is not supposed to take his wife with him. At the vanaprastha stage of retired life, or the stage midway between householder life and renounced life, one may keep his wife as an assistant without sex relations. But in the sannyas order of life, one cannot keep his wife with him. Otherwise, a person like Kardava Muni could have kept his wife with him, and there would have been no hindrance to his prosecution of self-realization. Paragraph. Kardava Muni followed the Vedic injunction that no one in sannyas life can have any kind of relationship with women. But what is the position of a woman who is left by her husband? She is entrusted to the son, and the son promises that he will deliver his mother from entanglement. A woman is not supposed to take sannyas. The so-called spiritual societies concocted in modern times give sannyas even to women, although there is no sanction in the Vedic literature for a woman's accepting sannyas. Otherwise, if it were sanctioned, Cardamom, and he would have taken his wife and given her sannyas. The woman must remain at home. She has only three stages of life. Dependency on the father in childhood, dependency on the husband in youth, and in old age, dependency on the grown-up son, such as Kapila. In old age, the progress of woman depends on her, on the grown-up son. The ideal son, Karma Muni, is assuring his father of the deliverance of his mother so that his father may go peacefully without anxiety for his good wife. Kapila Dev leaves too. And then what? She's left unprotected? Well, she's protected by the gift that's given by Kapila to Devahuti. So the flow here is Kapila Dev is giving blessings specifically that Kardamuni may leave. He's giving blessings that I, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, in the form of Kapila, will appear in your heart. So while you're remote, no need to worry, because I'll be with you. And in fact, you will see me. And you'll achieve spiritual perfection in this life and after this life. And then the indication, at least, that Prabhupada is giving in the purport is Lord Vishnu, the Lord of Kardama Muni's heart, knows that Kardama Muni has some anxiety about his good wife. He doesn't seem to indicate it so much. I'm ready to go. I've done my duty. But he has a natural concern, and therefore the good son, Kapila, is reassuring, I will deliver her also. And adhyatmikim. We are in ISKCON, from Prabhupada's purports primarily, we're familiar with these three, adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. Miseries. It's in Bhagavad Gita, and it's not specifically in terms of misery. It's a description of categories of entities in the mind, other living entities, and the devas. So the other living entities, it's the focus goes to the soul. And so that there's the condition adhyatmika, and then there's the liberated adhyatmika. So it's because of context, it's referring to the liberated adhyatmika, the door to spiritual life. The door to spiritual life. Interesting. Door to the spiritual life in the sense that knowledge, like a door or like a window, it gives an indication of what's on the other side. But then the application of that knowledge, and even more specifically, the application of that knowledge with devotion to the Supreme, delivers the gift that the door invites you into this spiritual realm. So in other words, he's going to give Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy serves like a door, but to use the door, you have to apply the Sankhya philosophy, and the application of Sankhya philosophy is detachment from matter and identification with an attachment to spirit, and then meditation upon the Supreme Spirit, where the mind should go is the Supreme Spirit, and then acting in devotion, the individual soul to the Supreme Soul, or Supreme Spirit, bhakti. These two things are there in bhakti. What the mind does what the contemplations are, and then the practical activity. So consciousness, and then the movements of the body, gross and subtle. Consciousness and the movements of the body, gross and subtle, in practical terms. It's quite simple, and it's quite contrasting with the impersonal conception. For example, the impersonal conception doesn't have a notion of a soul, or the Supreme Soul, or relation between the individual and Supreme Soul. That notion is sacrifice unto Brahman. Just render everything to Brahman. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmajau brahmanauhutam. Just offer sacrifice unto Brahman. And everything becomes situated in Brahman. In that way, this mistaken notion that there's a soul, there's a supreme soul, and that there's matter, and all these other things, those are just upadis, and all there is Brahman. And you get Brahman realization. At least that's the notion. And it's quite different. In one sense, it's a little easier for the binary mind to say, yeah, that must be it. If over here there's diversity, over there there must be no diversity. Over here there's me and others. On the other side there must be no me and others. Yeah, that makes sense. It's all one. So I just have to get to the all one space. And then I'm happily God. I've realized my Godhood. It's enticing as well as from the material perspective, from a speculative perspective. Yeah, that makes sense. But from a spiritual perspective, it really doesn't make sense in a lot of ways. In any case, the adhyatmikim is the door to spiritual life. So, matra adhyatmikim vidyam. He's going to give Sankhya philosophy to his mother. Shamanim sarvakarmana. Shamanim, sarvakarmana. Shamanim, ending all fruitive work. So the jnanis that have a different idea of what's the goal, their goal is becoming one with the Supreme, I can stop all fruitive work, like karma sannyas. Because I situate myself in gyan or gyan yoga, so I can do karma sannyas. Just give up activities. Give up duties, give up activity. Just cultivate knowledge. Read Vedanta Sutra, chant Om, and become God. Become Brahman. Because it's not a personal conception of God, it's just a Brahman conception of the Supreme. I merge with Brahman. Karma sannyas. That's how they take this. Vidyam. Shamanim. Sarva. Karmanam. But it's the Vaishnava conception is quite different. It's the activities have no bondage. They're no longer material activity or transcendental activities because of the act of sacrifice unto the Supreme. It's both transcendentalists or transcendental aspirants have their rationale of how they read the message of Scripture. And we need to be reminded, as Prabhupada stressed in yesterday's purport, stressed everywhere again and again. So that we can see clearly the path of bhakti and we move on the path of bhakti and don't get lured by impersonal conception. So he's protecting us again and again. Nirvishesha shunyavadi pascha chyadi satarini. Vitarishye yaya chasau. Vitarishye yaya chasau. Asau is her, this is his mother, Devahuti, or the wife of Kardama. I shall give her this transcendental knowledge, the byproduct or a built within it fruit is bhayam. She will also become ati tarishyati. She'll overcome fear. And fear is one of the six gates to hell. And it's very prominent. It's an animal propensity that's very prominent. We discussed this in Prahlad's prayers extensively, several times, fear and fearlessness. So this fearlessness position is the spirit, Vaikuntha position, no anxiety, no fear. So minimally, beyond the bodily conception. So again, there are these two ways. The bodily conception is just call it false. Just give it a bad name. It's false. It doesn't exist. You only think that it exists because all there is Brahman. So it just doesn't exist. And you, the fear is because you don't understand that you're Brahman, because really there's nothing to fear because all there is Brahman. And the Vaishnava conception is, while we're doing our activities in the temporary world, there's danger and we're wary of the danger, and the greatest danger, referring again to Prahlad, is bad association. Association of persons whose qualities are such that it blocks or obscures, it minimizes our thoughtfulness of the Supreme. Of course, fruit of activities does the same thing. So when fruit of activities, fruit, not activity, but fruit of activity, not going to work or going to school or living your life however you live your life, but fruit of activities, when all activities become devotional activities, then fear is gone. The bodily conception is gone. Obscuring the personality of Godhead is gone. And one becomes fearless. Fearless because one knows that Krishna's protection will always be there, even in calamity. Doesn't mean you'll have no calamity, but even in calamity, the protection of the Supreme Lord is there. Because we know he's kind to his devotee. He's Bhakta Vatsala. And the devotee is fully dependent upon that merciful, that brings fearlessness, doesn't prevent calamity, saying it again, doesn't prevent calamity, but it brings fearlessness, even in the case of calamity. The protection of the Supreme Lord is there. Our well-being is secure because Krishna is very kind to his devotee. And we know that. As one goes beyond the fruitive notion, the fruitive notion says, well, he's kind, but what if he overlooks me? I mean, I'm this little inconsequential person, and he's maybe too busy or distracted with, you know, more important things than little old me, so I have to spend some time in the fear department, protecting, defending, we may put locks on our door or whatever the things we do for, but it's the activity, consciousness behind the activity becomes different. Bhakti, service to the Supreme. Why make Krishna a cop and he has to go and give me protection all the time when I do foolish, irresponsible things? So let me be responsible to Krishna. In parenting, it's another one of those things. The concern that my child may get sick. Children may, not only may get sick, children get sick. And then what do? Well, you get a doctor, but there's no guarantee you get a doctor. Then the doctor's going to cure the illness. It could be one of those things that just keeps going and going and keeps going. Therefore, ultimately, even when you go to get a doctor, you're in the hands of Krishna. And he is the protector. So she's in the beginning of the next chapter, 25, she's going to express her fear and anxiety that my good husband Kardamuni's gone and I'm very attached. And feeling those feelings of attachment, and because of that, my intelligence is disturbed. My mind is disturbed, my intelligence is disturbed. Whoa. Help me. So he does. How to go beyond this disturbance of mind and distorted intelligence. And he gives a 6-7 chapter answer to that question. She becomes delivered. The final chapter of this section, when she does her meditation, she does everything that he said to do. She's absorbed. And the fear, the anxiety, the disturbance is gone. So it's gone because she's applying the understanding that she's heard thoroughly, item by item by item. She's very capable and she follows it. Promise fulfilled. He promises, Kapila promises, reassures or gives the benediction to Kardama, as you are being delivered, I will deliver your mother too. So he knows what's coming, you know. He can see into the future. Or it's a past time that he's performing. He appeared for that purpose, so he knows it's going to happen. And it happens. And when he's completed, he gets up and he leaves too. And she follows. And she's not in anxiety, and she achieved perfection. It's a story with a happy ending. Any discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, in your lecture you mentioned that to sometimes understand impersonalism is easy for the binary mind.
Yeah.
So I feel the more sometimes I read about Krishna or hear about it, it's very bewildering. It's very unbelievable, unfathomable. So I have a question about Krishna's quality of this. We keep hearing that he's very merciful, very kind.
I'm waiting for the but.
And we see that his anger, you know, like his transcendental anger towards demons. But my question is, does he ever get angry at his devotees? Like any, shows his anger, like maybe through like punishment or...
Are you concerned about your own life or something? Something like that?
Something that.
You're a mother. And your two boys, they may sometimes do something that you think isn't appropriate. But so you may say something, scold him or something, but it's out of love, not anger, not the other kind of anger. You know, so a loving mother will do that. She must do that. Inappropriately, proportionate to the circumstance. I was just reading Lilamrita the other day, where Srila Prabhupada, it's a long narration, but there was a relationship with somebody at the UN, some fellow, a Greek fellow, I think his name sounds like a Greek name. That's my recollection. And this man had invited Prabhupada to speak at the UN. And then he made a big introduction, and there was some appreciation for what Prabhupada spoke. And so the man complimented Prabhupada afterwards, you know, wow, he did, it was really good. Then Prabhupada invited him to come visit. So an appointment was made. And when the man came to visit, the devotee that was put in charge of receiving the man was given the instruction, not explicitly, I mean, everybody knew what was going on. This is a man from the UN is going to come and see Prabhupada. Don't let anybody come in. So the gentleman came to the storefront, and the person was a little mad. I mean, daffy, crazy, mad. And I said, sorry, you know, no one's to disturb Prabhupada. He's busy right now. It went on. He waited for 2 hours. He finally left, disturbed. And then Prabhupada, you know, had waited for, the man's late. Prabhupada came down and asked the devotees, where is Mr. So-and-so? And the person who was the Jai or Vijay said, oh, he came, but I told him, you know, that you were busy. So he left. And Prabhupada exhibited anger and called him, you know, you crazy fool, or something like that. You know, something. It's, you know, some very strong. Because they had prepared a big feast, and you know, Prabhupada personally cooked. It was an important relationship that just got burned by foolishness. So Prabhupada didn't spare speaking strongly. But it wasn't. It was for the well-being of the student, not, you know, the mode of passion transformed into the mode of ignorance. So, is there such a thing as Krishna or Krishna's pure devotee exhibiting transcendental anger with a devotee? Yes, but then it's not. It's like, take it the other way. The gopis may speak some way with Krishna where it looks like they're angry. And Krishna may say something to them that looks like he's angry. Or to the cowherd boys. Or to Madhu Mangal. It's a transcendental loving exchange. And is there room for that in Krishna? So, aside from something very high like that, even with us, if there is such thing, it's meant for elevation and purification. That's all. It is a nice example from Ramayana. When the minister of Dasarath proposed that Ram should come back for, you know, atheistic reasons, Ram spoke with anger. And then Vashishta said, he knows better than that. He was just doing whatever he could to get you to come back. We all want you to come back. So, sometimes, but not in the material way, in the elevation way. Okay. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, about the dependence of women on the protection of a father or husband and children like that. I was just thinking of a couple of things. One is, here we see that Mother Devahuti is being protected by Kapila Dev. And then in Mahabharata, when we see that when all the Pandavas had left, Draupadi was just alone.
Yes,
in one
she
sense.
Was.
And
we
hear that everybody has to fly their plane back to Godhead like that. So I was just trying to understand what is the right way to depend, because sometimes with dependence I feel that there's like a tendency to expect. Expectations or attachments also kind of come into when... like the dependence, how do we, what's the right way?
Well, the circumstances, instructions from Srila Prabhupada to women whose husbands, something happened, different things happened, and what should they do? And one instruction Prabhupada gave, which is pretty high, he said, make Krishna your husband. So, that another question some time ago, supposing there's a woman who, for various reasons, does not become married. What is she to do? What is her protection? And at some point, you know, anyway. So there's rules and there's anomalies or circumstances that are not, just don't neatly closely fit within the rules, then, you know, then the society, ideally, we're not evolved to that stage, but where the society looks after individuals, particularly individuals who have dedicated their lives to Krishna's service, and due to circumstance their husband is no longer there. It may be the sannyas stage, or it may be the husband departs stage. And it's not at all uncommon. There's so many Bengali widows in Vrindavan. They have their whole ashram. And so in the real world, it's not uncommon. Now, societally, what should be done, or just if even on an individual basis, what should be done? Then one takes shelter or some place where there is protection, like Jamuna and Dinatarani did, for example. So it's case by case, there's standards and there's exceptions, and exceptions need to be where there's some sense of feeling and being protected. So it's not, I'm not answering in detail, I'm answering in principle. Is that all right? Something?
I'm thinking about application part, Guru Maharaj.
About which?
Application. I see that application is weak. I mean, I also feel that resources are weak. Like, I cannot remember so much. Things like that. Like, when I hear or when I read, I don't remember so much like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you said some time back, we try to do our best.
Yeah, that's one thing you remember. That's good.
Just wanting to ask, is there anything more?
Try to improve. Do our best. And then continue. At least strive. If we strive to go the next step, Krishna will help us. If we don't strive to go to the next step, tendency is to regress. So strive to go the next step. Not extreme, but looking forward to the next step. At least, you know, anticipating. It's like, you know, say for example, controlling the mind when chanting. Strive. And continue to strive. And that's the clearing stage, and if we don't continue to strive, then it falls in another category. Inattentiveness. Yes?
Yes. Forgive me if I did not understand something about, again, the point about dependence.
Dependence.
Yeah. Within, like, grihastha ashram, and when we try to depend on the husband or depend on the children, I don't know if I didn't understand the previous answer, but the thing is that I feel like there is so much tendency to expect something and put pressure on the other person. Like, because I'm depending and you need to do things for me. Like, even if I set my consciousness, okay, dependence is on Krishna, but there is a mode of expecting things. So I'm trying to understand what should I watch for, or how should I depend within the grihastha?
There's many things to say, but one really big one is our dependence is ultimately upon Krishna, and that's an expectation. That supposing I have an expectation that Krishna is going to, whatever it is, provide or protect or supply or something, and it doesn't meet my expectation. Well, we've got a problem in our relationship with Krishna, if that's the case, because he's not obliged because we have an expectation. And then just, you know, scale it down. Expectation of those that represent Krishna, expectation from husband. You know, it's a principle. And then in marriage, one of the fundamental marriage is my spouse, my husband or my wife, is not a perfect person. I can't expect they're going to be a perfect person when they're not a perfect person. And we can then turn our attention to Krishna. My dear Lord Krishna, I'm dependent upon you. Even in my relationship with my husband or others who are, I'm feeling, and appropriately so, feeling some dependency upon. But I'm not going to project my expectations upon them other than ultimately Krishna, because they're simply agents and representatives. If I see them properly, I'll see them that way. It's worth saying it again. It's an illusion. It's worse than illusion. It's a big mistake to consider my expectations are the boundaries for the person who I'm in a marriage with, whether it's husband to wife or wife to husband. Or, you know, parents to child, or child to parents. one of the things I came across in the Ayodhya Yatra was, in common circumstances, parents will sometimes say to their child, "You should be like Ram." And the indication of your father should be your life and soul. And then the child could say, if they don't say they're thinking it, "You should be like Dasarath." Or be like Prahlad, and why don't you be like Nrisingadev instead of Hiranyakashipu? So the expectation of perfection is unreal. That in itself leads, a false expectation leads to frustration. And frustration, and anger, and the whole shebang. Material existence. And close relationships become disturbed by that. And, you're asking it twice, so I'm spending a little extra time. So then what to do if this principle of protection is meant? It is meant. So how to address oneself to that? It's ultimately dependent on the protection of Krishna. And this is the arrangement that Krishna has made for me. Here I am. These are my parents, or this is my husband, this is my wife. And, at least in terms of marriage, there's choices involved, but once choices are made, a child or a parent, I would like this child, not that one. There is the care of the soul from the parent to the child and vice versa. Supposing the parent is off the wall. So what's the child to do? Because I'm dependent. The expectations and reality need to match. And ultimately the expectation is dependence upon Krishna and on His terms. So that's the realignment that's needed. That's Krishna consciousness. And the nature of a Krishna conscious marriage as well. Okay, last question over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. If you understand Kadva Muni, he has Kapila Muni is his son, but still when the time came, he left his wife and then son and then went to forest. But just to correlate to myself, if everything is comfortable, I try to be in that situation. It's very difficult to change even small things out of, getting out of that comfort zone. So what are the different things, I can practically do to come out of that comfort zone?
Well, life has its circumstances that take us there. And, involuntarily, circumstances take us there. And then comes the exam is, are you going to continue to be Krishna conscious, or are you going to be Maya conscious of the problem and addressing the problem, and it makes me uncomfortable and... But this, the other, beyond the comfort zone, the second response is something like Vamsidhari's question. Strive to go a little further. Not too much, but something that is beyond my comfort zone. A really, really practical example of this is book distribution. Because it's uncomfortable. And it, on appearance, transcendentally, it's perfectly natural. The perfectly natural is, I have a relationship with Krishna, and that relationship with Krishna means there's relationship with other living entities. And there's some living entities that are devotees. And it's very nice and very easy to have relationships with devotees. Then there's all these other living entities that aren't devotees, but they're part of Krishna. So what's the proper relationship between myself and those other parts and parcels of Krishna? To engage them in Krishna consciousness. So Harinam and book distribution and prasadam distribution, they're very natural. But it's unnatural, by our conditioning at least. We go find somebody we don't know and ask them to take something they don't want. They didn't wake up in the morning and think, gee, I hope I meet a devotee who gives me a Bhagavad Gita. That's not what they're anticipating. So we're entering into their bubble, but it's natural. It's uncomfortable. It's out of the comfort zone. That's a good step. Knowing it's authorized by our great acharyas, and it's good for me and good for them at the same time. That's an example. And it could be other things. Some service other than that one, some service that's asked of me. So not something that's like, whoa, way over there, but something that's ordinarily I wouldn't think of doing this, but I've been asked to do this, so let me take up this service. Or something within the family. Tolerant. Or something. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.